Welcome to Bootstrap MD, the Physician Entrepreneurs Podcast, your source to help you, the entrepreneurial doctor, live life on your own terms. Get new ideas and inspiration to help you find more balance in your professional life. If you're ready to get the knowledge without all the hype, you've come to the right place. It's the Bootstrap MD Podcast. And now your host, Dr. Mike Wu Ming.
You've built a career helping others. Now it's about building something lasting for yourself and your family. Lightstone Direct connects you to private real estate investments designated to create lasting wealth. You've earned access. Take your seat at the table at lightstonedirect.com. All investments involve risk. Please visit lightstonedirect.com for a full list of disclosures. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Bootstrap MD, the podcast for physician and healthcare entrepreneurs. Now, today we're going to be talking about something that, unfortunately, we need to talk about this. It's deeply personal to me, something that people don't nearly talk about. It doesn't get enough airtime, medical school residency, or even in physician conferences. And that's about protection, your protection, legal protection, financial protection, professional protection. And before we dive in, let me be very clear about a few things here. I'm not an attorney, and nothing in this episode can constitute legal advice. You need to consult with the right people, with qualified legal professionals for your specific situation. Today, we'll be sharing about experiences that I've had as a physician and a practice owner. I won't be able to discuss any specific ongoing matters or cases. What I'm sharing with you are general lessons that I've learned, unfortunately, the hard way, about risks that physician entrepreneurs face, or physicians in general. Now, some of what I'm going to talk about come from experiences that I've personally had, others that I've seen from afar. And I'm not sharing this not to air grievances, but because I wish somebody had actually told me these things before I learned for myself. So here's the reality. Medical school taught us how to diagnose diseases, taught us how to interpret labs, taught us how to manage complex patients. But nobody really taught us about how to protect yourself from regulatory traps, credential misuse, or the legal landmines that can come from being a physician and a practice owner. And this is important to think about, because as a physician, you need to learn to practice defense medicine. As an owner, you need to practice defense business. It's the same skill, it's different applications. And having gone through some of these situations made me realize, when you open up a practice, your name is your most valuable asset. It also becomes your most vulnerable one. So I want to walk you through some of the exposure points that I've either experienced or witnessed in the physician community, and more importantly, what proactive steps you can take to protect yourself before these things happen to you. Because trust me, it is much better to prevent these issues from happening than to deal with them after the fact. So let's start with something that seems simple, but can become an absolute nightmare, and that's your National Provider Identifier, or your NPI. Your NPI is like your medical social security number. It's tied to every claim you submit, every prescription you write, every patient you treat. And because it's valuable, it's also a target. Now, let me tell you from experience. I've had my NPI misused, and a fraudulent use of your NPI can happen without you having any idea it's occurring. And when you're finally discovering it, you're already behind, way behind. Think of your NPI kind of like your house keys. You wouldn't hand them out to everyone you meet, right? You wouldn't email photos of your keys to random people, but we treat our medical credentials with way less care than we treat our front door keys. And I learned this lesson the way I wish I hadn't. But here's what I've learned. Your credentials can be misused by former contractors, telehealth companies you briefly work with, partners, billing services you didn't even know existed. And when this happened, you could face Medicare audits, insurance investigations, and worst case scenarios, allegations of fraud that you had absolutely nothing to deal with. So now I audit my NPI quarterly, and I encourage you to do the same. So what you can do is you can go to NPPES NPI registry and check your information. Make sure your practice address, your contact information, your taxonomy codes are accurate. If something looks off, address it immediately. Don't wait. You also want to check your enrollment status with CMS through the PCOS system. That PCOS is Provider Enrollment Chain and Ownership System. I had to look it up. This shows you where you're enrolled and what entities are associated with your credentials. because I've seen things popped up that shocked me. And here's something simple that I wish I'd done from day one. Set up Google Alerts for your name plus the term NPI. It takes about 2 minutes. It costs $0. It would have saved me, well, let's just say, significantly more than 2 minutes of headaches. You'd be surprised what can appear. If someone is advertising services using your credentials, you want to know about it before a patient, an insurance company, or a regulator does. Also, monitor billing activity through the CMS Program Integrity Portal. If claims are being submitted in your name for services you didn't provide, patterns will show up there. Now let's talk about identity theft more broadly, because physician credentials are absolute gold on the black market. Your DEA number, your medical license, your NPI, these are high-value targets. So I use business credit monitoring, not just personal credit monitoring. These are services like Experian, Equifax, or TransUnion that offer business monitoring. There are also services specifically for professionals like us, ID.me, or LifeLock Business. And here's a basic security practice that I learned the hard way. Never email your DEA or NPI number in plain text, ever. I know, you're thinking just one email, right? What's the harm? Well, that's why that too. Spoiler alert, there's harm. If you need to share credentials, you can use encrypted channels. I know it sounds like a hassle, but believe me, it's worth its weight in gold. Services like Virtue, V-I-R-T-R-U, Virtue, or Proton Mail makes encryption easy. If someone asks you to email your DA number, find a secure way to share it instead. Be the person who makes it slightly inconvenient, but infinitely more secure. The bottom line, your credentials are your professional identity. I've learned to protect them like I would my bank account, because in many ways, they're more valuable and even harder to recover if compromised. Segment two, I've talked about supervising mid-level providers. Now, this is where I've learned physician owners face significant exposure, supervising nurse practitioners and physician's assistants. And let me be absolutely clear. I work with some of the most amazing nurse practitioners and PAs. This is not about the competence or professional of NPAs and PAs. I know there are some doctors who use derogatory terms about this, but the ones that I've worked with can be excellent clinicians. But this is purely about legal structure and liability that comes with supervising roles. So here's the thing. When you supervise someone, legally speaking, you're co-signing their work. It's like co-signing a loan, except the loan never ends and the balance can grow in ways you didn't expect. So when you supervise mid-level providers, you're legally accountable for what happens under your supervision. So that's reality in most states. And it's something I now take very seriously. The main risk areas I become aware of. First, there's state-specific scope of practice rules. Every state is different, and I learned that what seems straightforward often isn't. These laws also change. Resources like the American Association of Nurse Practitioners state law maps and the American Academy of Physician Associates state law database help me understand what the current rules actually are in my state. Secondly, there's documentation gaps, especially in telemedicine. So remote supervision can create complexities that I didn't initially appreciate. If you're reviewing charts, how often should you be reviewing them? How are you documenting that review? These are questions that can become very important, especially if something goes wrong. Third, there are written oversight policies. Now, I'm not talking about generic templates that you can get from the internet. I learned I needed customized supervisory agreements for each NP or PA that clearly outlined five things. That is the scope of practice within the organization, the chart review frequency and process, communication protocols, prescribing authority and limitations, and emergency procedures. This creates a clear paper trail that demonstrates appropriate supervision. Now I want to share with you something I wish someone had told me earlier. You need to maintain actual logs, like logs of chart reviews, logs of communication about complex cases, logs of quarterly or monthly audits. I know. More paperwork. Living the dream, right? But if you've ever faced a complaint or investigation, these logs can become critical evidence. They're the difference between I supervised appropriately and I can prove I supervised appropriately. That's a big difference. Also, make sure your malpractice insurance explicitly covers your supervisor role. And I learned I need to call my carrier and confirm this directly. If you need a rider or endorsement for supervisory liability, make sure you get it in writing. And if you're supervising multiple providers across different locations or through telehealth, the complexity multiplies dramatically. So I have a healthcare attorney, actually a few healthcare attorneys, who review my supervisory structure annually. It's an investment that I view as essential protection. The key lesson I've learned is supervision isn't passive. It's not signing off on protocols once and walking away. It requires ongoing documentation, communication, and evidence of active oversight. Segment three I want to talk about, the third I want to talk about, is digital compliance and accessibility. And this is something that completely caught me off guard. Digital compliance. So, I run a medical practice, not a tech company. So why do I need to worry about website accessibility? Well, famous last words. We were involved in a case that where we got sued, and it was for a clinic that I'd overseen. And it wasn't even from a patient. It was basically someone who saw an educational video, and they sued us because we didn't have closed captioning on it. And we eventually had to pay a five-figure amount for it. We learned the hard way again, and we found out that there are people or attorneys who find people who are willing to sue. And we found out that this person had sued 600 plus small businesses in San Diego County. And here's why they're doing it, is because there's the Americans with Disability Act that was passed that applies to what your digital presence is. It's your website, your patient portal, your videos, even the PDFs that you're going to give, all of it. So think of it like your website is like your waiting room. You wouldn't build a waiting room with stairs and no ramp, right? You wouldn't hang signs that only some patients could read. So digital accessibility is the same concept, except we didn't learn until it was an expensive way and we had to settle. Here's what concerned me when I started learning this, is there's been a significant increase in ADA-related lawsuits. This happened a few years ago when we had to settle, targeting healthcare providers for lack of digital accessibility. So I personally learned about cases involving things like videos without closed captions, websites that can't be navigated with a keyboard, or forms that aren't compatible with screen readers. Now, you could say we were targeted, and I would probably agree with you, but these are legitimate access issues for patients with disabilities. And if you have a video with no closed captioning, you could become a litigation target. So here's what I've learned what compliance looks like. Start first with your website accessibility. You can use tools like the Wave Accessibility Checker. It's free. Search it on Google. It'll scan your website for common issues. Things like missing alt text on images, poor color contrast, or navigation problems. Again, for videos, this became a big lesson for us. Enable captioning. Always do that every single time. Now, if you're using YouTube, they have auto captioning, but review it because it's not always accurate. Trust me, you don't want auto captions turning your medical terminology into, let's say, something creative. Vimeo, big video streaming company, also has good captioning tools. But bottom line, learn not to post videos without captions, period. So for your patient portal and any PDFs you distribute, make sure they're accessible. This might require working with your web developer or your MR vendor. So make sure your patient portals and any PDFs are accessible. Again, also there are templates available through resources like accessibility.com. It's a statement shows that you're aware of accessibility requirements and committed to compliance. So make sure you have an accessibility statement on your website. Now, if your patient has significant digital assets, it might be important to retain a compliance consultant for an annual review. Again, I learned this much cheaper than dealing with a problem after the fact. Now let's talk about HIPAA and cybersecurity, because I learned that data breaches are the number one sources of fines and litigation for small medical practices. Every digital tool needs to be HIPAA compliant. I mean, everything, email, text messaging, patient communications, video visits, file storage. Don't use Gmail or consumer Zoom accounts for patient communication. So we require two-phase authentication for everybody who accesses patient data. You want required device encryption. These are basic safeguards that can prevent a massive percentage of breaches. I know it's a hassle. We go through the same thing, but believe me, you don't want to find out the hard way. There's the HHS Office for Civil Rights has cybersecurity guidance specifically for healthcare. Search on Google. It's free. It's comprehensive. And I wish I read it more carefully early in my journey. Also, you need to start thinking about carrying cyber insurance through your malpractice carrier. If you have patient data, I believe you need this coverage. A single breach could cost hundreds of thousands in notifications, credit monitoring, legal fees, and fines.
Running an independent practice has never been harder, especially with rising health insurance costs. That's why a physician created Rise Health, premium health insurance built exclusively for independent doctors, their employees, and their families with cost savings. Take control of your practice and protect the people who matter most. Get your quote today at risehealth.com. That's risehealth.com. And stay connected. Follow at rise.health on Instagram and also find them on LinkedIn at risehealth.
Let's talk about insurance and legal structure, because this is where I learned to build defensive layers. You start with malpractice insurance, right? Everybody's got that. It's obvious. But here's what I learned. Running a practice is like driving in a snowstorm. You just don't need windshield wipers. You need good tires. You need four-wheel drive, emergency supplies in the trunk, and a backup plan. One protective measure isn't enough. A practice ownership requires multiple types of coverage: professional liability for clinical work, supervisory liability if you oversee mid-level providers, cybersecurity coverage for potential data breaches, general business liability for your practice as an entity, and employment practice liability insurance, or EPLI, which covers employment-related claims. There's a company out there, I'm not associated with them, called The Doctor's Company. They're very well known, but they do have an excellent risk management library on their website with checklists and updates. I found it valuable regardless of who you're insured through. Now, beyond insurance, there's also structuring your entity. Now, this is something, again, it can be kind of confusing, but it's important that you make sure. Every state is different, but I consider separating functions into different legal entities. For example, you could have a professional LLC for clinical practice. In California, we need a professional corporation. You might have a separate LLC for marketing, management, or real estate holdings. Why do you need all these different businesses? Because it creates liability separation, especially as you're entrepreneurs. It's important that you understand essential structure of your businesses. And this isn't something you set up and forget. It's important that you get an annual legal review with a healthcare attorney who specializes in medical practice compliance. Yes, I know this costs money, but believe me, you don't want to learn after the fact. I learned that compared to the cost of defending problems or dealing with regulatory actions, it's minimal. So I know that's a lot of information on there, and this topic is not as fun as others, but it's so important. You really have to go ahead and have these operational safeguards. So what are some safeguards that you can do? Quarterly internal audits of billing, prescribing patterns, and HR practices. Why you want to do it quarterly? Because something what seems small in January could be a disaster by December. So if you're looking for anything that doesn't look right, investigate immediately. Secondly, there's data security basics that I wish I prioritized earlier: encrypted backups and offsite redundancy. I mean, let's be honest, your office could burn down tonight. Ransomware could hit tomorrow. Can you restore operations? If your answer is, I'm not sure, I don't think so, probably not good enough. Third, documentation retention. Keep supervision logs, compliance documentation, and training records for at least 7 years. Storage is cheap. It really is cheap, but the alternative is not cheap. Fourth, make sure you vet your vendors correctly. Any vendor that touches patient data usually signs a BAA, what's known as a business associate agreement. Your billing company, your answering service, your ID support, your shredding company. I learned you can't make any exceptions on here. And so you should have a crisis plan. A crisis plan, a written playbook for data breaches, credential misuse, border DEI inquiries, employee misconduct. You don't want to figure this out in the moment. You want to plan that exists before you need it. Again, from my experience, if you ever face any kind of investigation or legal matter, here are the principles that I follow. You know, preserve all documentation, no deletions, no edits, everything gets saved. If you've involved in an investigation, don't comment it on publicly or online. Direct all inquiries to your attorney. The only statement you need to say is this matter is being reviewed by counsel. There are protective organizations like the AMA Legal Defense Fund and my friends over at Medical Justice, which specializes in protecting physicians from defamation and litigation abuse. These are like insurance for your reputation. One more thing, from my experience, burnout from legal and compliance stress can be very real. It can affect your mental bandwidth and your ability to practice good medicine. I learned it's important to have good peers, physician coaching, physician mastermind groups, legal peer forums. You need people who understand what you've gone through. Because here's something that I remind myself regularly. You can rebuild money, you can recover financial setbacks, but you cannot easily rebuild your name or your license. Those are irreplaceable. Again, this is a pretty heavy subject. We don't like talking about this, but I think it's important that we talk about these things. And I just want to bring this home. If you're feeling overwhelmed, I completely understand. I've been there. but here's how I learned to think about this. In medicine, we're trained to prevent complications in our patients. We don't wait for the heart attack. We manage blood pressure and cholesterol now. In practice ownership and entrepreneurship, the same principle applies. We prevent complications in our business. We don't wait for problems. We build safeguards now. Think of it like fire safety. You install soft smoke detectors before the fire, not after. You get fire extinguishers before you need them. You have an escape plan because there's smoke in the hallway. It's the same concept, just a different arena. So everything that I've shared today, you know, I've learned through personal experiences, through my colleagues' experiences. This isn't a fun subject to talk about, but it's an important subject to talk about. You know, some of it was easy to deal with. Some of it I've had to learn the hard way. And what it taught me is that the more protection that you build proactively, the less you're going to rely on damage control reactively. Again, you can rebuild money, you can recover from financial setbacks, but you can't easily rebuild your name or your license. So protect them accordingly. Again, if this seems overwhelming, start small. Pick one thing from today's episode. Maybe tomorrow you're going to audit your NPI. Next week, maybe review your supervisor agreements. Add captioning to videos. Just start somewhere. And it's not about living in fear. I refuse to practice medicine in fear. The reason why I went into cash-based practices was I can control what I can control. But I need to learn to practice with protection in place. You became a physician because you wanted to help people. You became an entrepreneur because you want to build something meaningful. But don't let preventable issues derail that mission. Again, I want to share with these guys because I wish someone had told me this stuff earlier. Learn from my experiences. Protect what you're building. And again, let me give a final disclaimer. Nothing in this episode is legal advice. I'm not an attorney. I'm not your attorney. Every situation is unique. You need to consult with a qualified legal counsel for your specific circumstances. This is just general education information. This is not legal guidance. The resources that I mentioned are just educational starting points, not substitutes for professional legal counsel. All right, guys. I promised you next episode is going to be a little bit more fun on here. But I hope this resonated with you. Share this episode with another physician entrepreneur who needs to hear it. Take care of yourself. Protect what you built. And as an entrepreneur, you're going to have your highs and lows. Do something a little each day to get you closer to your goals and keep moving forward.
You've just listened to the Bootstrap MD podcast. For more valuable resources, as well as past recordings of our show, check out our website at bootstrapmd.com. Now let's get to work.